It's a pleasure to welcome Willie Porter to the show. Hello, Willie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
You're headed up for the Winnipeg Folk Festival. Have you ever been up our way before?
I've been up there to fish and things of that nature, but never been up there to play music.
Okay, so you know about the mosquitoes. I don't have to tell you about that then.
Yeah, the size of Volkswagen. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. But I don't know how much, I always ask folks this. We like to toot our own horn and assume that the world knows about the Winnipeg Folk Festival, but have you heard much about our festival?
I have. I've actually been hoping to play it for about 10 years now, and so I'm really excited to get to come up. I know it's one of the best music festivals in the world.
Well, we agree.
I hope you do.
What does the festival allow you to do? Like, I mean, obviously there's sort of a simple, easy answer to that, but why is it so important to you to play a festival like this?
Well, I just think that it's it has a lot of respect in the music community, particularly singer-songwriters and acoustic musicians. And I think on a broader scale, it's really nice to get to play in front of Canadian audiences. They're very respectful and quite a bit more reverent than folks in the States, if I may be so bold. I just think that they are more open to, something that's off a beaten trail, that's not an obvious musical statement, if you will.
Yeah.
So, and more European in nature in that respect. So, it's exciting to get to play music for, real music fans.
Yeah, we're definitely going in with an open mind, so I'm sure lots of folks will discover you for the first time, so that must be a good thing about it.
Yeah, I think so. And, I live in Wisconsin, which is so close to Canada that, I'm hoping to do more touring up there and such. So, hopefully this will pave the way for that.
For folks that aren't as familiar with you previously, do you want to give us a little bit of your story? Tell folks what you're all about?
Sure. I'm an acoustic guitarist and a songwriter and singer. And I've been doing this for about 15 years professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I tour all over the States. I've released a bunch of CDs, both live and studio stuff. And I've toured all over the world with people like Tori Amos, and Paul Simon, Jeff Beck, the Cranberries, and Jethro Tull, Ricky Lee Jones. So I've done a lot of touring,
mm-hmm.
And I've been really fortunate to do that. And I've been up through Canada, I guess, four or five times with other artists. Just haven't had the connections, I guess, to come back on my own.
Right.
And but I'm kind of an aggressive acoustic guitar player type, and in the vein of Michael Hedges, I guess. People compare me a lot to him, though I don't really do a lot of stuff instrumentally like that. I guess that if you were stretching for a genre, that would sort of be where my guitar playing is coming from.
I find a few things about your answer are pretty interesting to me. First of all, you said a guitarist first, songwriter, and then a singer. Is that how you sort of view yourself, as primarily a guitarist, and then a guy who writes songs, and then does singing is that sort of the last thing on your resume? Or?
that's a very astute observation. Yeah, I mean, I took a little bit of classical guitar, so I have some formal training, but not a lot. And,
yeah.
But the guitar is my first love, and writing songs, I love to do it, and I feel like I've written some good songs, but it doesn't come as easily to me as the guitar does.
Oh, yeah.
And singing, I love to sing, but again, it was something, I was playing guitar for 10 years before I ever tried to sing a song, so.
What about the guitar is it that drew you? Because I know, I was reading a bit about you, your dad was a pianist, and you played viola for a bunch of years, apparently, but why guitar do you focus on now? What about that instrument spoke to you?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with its transportability, and the ability to carry a whole song on the instrument. I think for the same reasons people strum them in college dorm rooms, that's why I picked it up and got into it mm-hmm. when I first did. And so now I'm, it's changed a lot. And I think it's just sort of a wide open instrument in terms of what you can do with it. It's with tunings and with different chord voicings, different styles. And, I just think it's such a broad voiced instrument that I would have played the cello had I been more courageous, because I think that's my favorite instrument on the planet. But I just, when I was young, I just didn't want to carry the thing around.
Yeah, yeah. What I love about your music is that you don't just take it and try to be a flashy, fancy guitar player. You're trying to be melodic, and you're trying to work that into the song without detracting from the song. A lot of people who are virtuosos at their instrument end up detracting from the quality of a song just because they're playing so well. Mm. But is it a conscious thing for you to try and balance those things out?
It really is. I think that's the great struggle for me, is that, you know, if you know how to play fast, or you know how to play a lot of inversions or voicings and things,
yeah,
you know, the challenge is, you know, is it musical? Does it speak to non-musicians?
Right.
And if you write a song, what serves the song? Is it a lot of notes? I mean, I certainly have tunes that have a lot of notes and a lot of odd meter and stuff in them. But, you know, that serves that particular tune.
Yeah.
Some tunes, you know, you just want to support the vocal, you know, and support the melody line. And if it means you're playing cowboy chords in first position, then so be it.
Yeah. It sounds like early on, from what I was reading, you got some notice on the radio for some of your more produced work. Were you not focusing so much on, I mean, being an acoustic guitar player then, or has that developed since then?
That has developed since then. And I think that, you know, I started out that way, and then I sort of went full circle.
Yeah.
You know, the producers I had worked with, Neil Dorsman, for instance, he told me, he said, you know, you have some really nice tunes here, and I think that in order for them to reach a broader audience, they need more support and more instrumentation. So we tried to flesh them out that way.
Right.
And I think it was a good choice at the time.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of leaning in a different direction. I like Spartan arrangements where if it's two or three people playing, they all have a very, very clear role and are supporting the song, you know, as a whole, as opposed to just layering more and more stuff on there to make it interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so interesting. Your latest record is Highwire Live, and it's pretty much just you doing a lot of the songs that people may have known from earlier records with the band.
Right, right. And that's getting back to how the tunes were actually written,
yeah.
You know, which was exciting for me, because I, you know, I would make these band records, and I invariably couldn't afford a band.
Yeah.
So I'd go out by myself, and people would say, you know, we love the records, but they don't really sound like you do live.
Yeah.
So there's the impetus for that.
It sounds like live performance came fairly naturally to you. You, from what I've read, I've never seen you live, but it sounds like you're a fairly gifted live performer and are able to attract a crowd, even ones, like you said, you've opened for people like the Cranberries and Tori Amos and stuff. How do you go into a situation like that and put on a show that people are going to care about?
Good question. I think the main thing is being honest about what it is you're putting out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did a tour with Stephen Fearing, and that's a laughing two-year-old, by the way. Hello, buddy. He was so amazing, and that the way he approached the show every night, and I learned a lot from it. And I think, to answer that question more directly, that's it. If you go out there and you're putting an honest spin on what you're trying to do and not trying to pose for the camera, if you will,
yeah,
I think people pick up on that, and you know, they respond to it in kind. They may not like the music, but they'll give you the respect for being there.
Yeah. Speaking of Stephen Fearing, it's funny you mentioned him, because he's the one that actually first mentioned your name to me and to a lot of people around here. He's great at doing that, at saying, you know, you should check out Willie Porter or Andy White or a bunch of other people. So it must.
Oh, that's nice to hear that.
I'm
a big fan of Stephen's, and he's a good friend.
And you said that you learn from him, but can you use sort of people as a role model like that? And what do you study how he does things and try to do them that way yourself?
Well, I think the thing that really impresses me about him, for instance, is that his writing is so well developed.
Yeah.
And particularly his lyric writing. I mean, he's a real poet, but he's got amazing guitar chops too. And you don't first. You know, it sort of creeps up on you. You don't realize what a great guitar player he is. The songs are so well thought out. So I think as I go on down the road here in this musical life. That's what I'm trying to flesh out. I want to write better songs. I don't care as much about whether the guitar is really flashy or if it rocks or it doesn't or et cetera. I want to communicate, and I think Stephen's reached a very high level of doing that.
It sounds like that's still a constant struggle for you, is working on getting great songs. How do you sort of judge what is the best song?
That's a really tough one to answer. I think emotional honesty, there has to be some sort of subtext in the tune that other people can buy into, and it has to have a multi-layered meaning, and that it's not just a singular dimension. Sorry.
No problem at all. I understand.
Yeah, it's just, and I think that's the thing. The metaphor has to have a couple different layers to it, and also I think it, you know, in most occasions, it has to have some, as I said, some emotional meaning. So even if it is, just makes you want to get up and groove, that's great. That's enough. But I think on repeated listenings, there has to be enough in the lyric that the meaning keeps spinning and you keep finding new layers to it. I think it's really important.
You you obviously have some kids behind you. How many kids do you have, and how old are they?
Well, I sound like five, but there's two of them, and there's a two-year-old and a four-year-old.
So they've come fairly recently in your career, which has been going on for a lot longer than that. How does having kids sort of change your goals as a musician, and does it change the way you write or the way you perform?
Well, I guess it changes things in that you have to be more organized, for one. And for two, it's a really healthy thing because, you know, I would push and tour as much as I could. Especially when records came out, to try and get them to as many people as I could and get the best gigs I could. And now I'm realizing that, you know, that career isn't everything. And the kids are just really, really wonderful for that. And, but I also used to spend the whole day working on a tune, and now I might get an hour or two to write. So I have to be more focused, and I have to be, you know, again, more organized creatively. So that's challenging.
You spoke of sort of the changes in your career, and that sort of reflected. You, early on, you were with a larger record label and did things a sort of a different way, and you've moved to a different record label now. And sort of why is that, and how has that changed the way you go about things?
Well, I think I went from wanting the brass ring to being happy to be in the ring.
Yeah.
And I recognize that, you know, there's such a trade-off with a bigger label. Giving up a lot of your own identity for the sake of the brand, in a way. And a lot of creative decisions become sort of group decisions as opposed to the artist left to their own devices. And so, I chose the road less traveled and went to a smaller label where they gave me full creative control and said, we believe in you. And no, the budgets aren't huge to make records, but they're really supportive and they're really organized, and I'm grateful to be where I am.
The records seem to be coming a little less frequently now. Is that because of the kids in the family, or because?
Yeah, that has everything to do with the kids.
Yeah,
I pulled back a lot and just focused on trying to be a dad and get that together and find some sort of rhythm with that, and it's coming along.
Yeah,
but I've got a new record that's pretty much written. I just have to get it recorded. I'm hoping to have something out by the first of the year.
Oh, that's good. You're one of those rare artists that, I really appreciate this, you're one of those rare artists that allows fans to tape your shows and then trade them. Tell me a bit about why you do that and how you think that's a good thing.
Well, I do it because I think that once the music leaves my hands and my mouth, it's not really mine anymore. And so I think that it's really fun for people that are there to record the show and then be able to share that moment that they had that maybe was powerful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think that it has a really nice ripple effect. It gets to people that wouldn't normally have heard it, possibly, and those folks come out and hear a show, and you know, and maybe they buy a T-shirt or they buy a CD at the show or something like that. So there really is no lost income in that, and I think that sort of fearful response from the record companies is malarkey.
Yeah, a lot of people are sort of afraid of that, of losing sales or whatever, but I think it has, I mean, in a lot of cases, I don't know if you know Fred Eaglesmith from Canada, but he's an example of someone who makes a lot of fans by you know, fans telling other fans and stuff like that. Same thing must be with your music, it seems.
Yeah, I think... Hold on one second.
Yeah.
Fucking crabby. Oh, my.
It's getting nap time, is it, Willie?
It is. It's nap time. The trough is empty, and I'm going to probably have to cut this short because we're going to get to a moment here.
No problem at all. It's. I will let you go deal with domestic things because they are indeed more important.
Well, I appreciate your time and your patience with this, and thank you so much for getting behind the show and giving me such a kind welcome to Winnipeg. I'm really looking forward to coming up.
Well, I think you're going to have a lot of fun. I know that we're going to be very pleased to see you, so we're looking forward to seeing you on the weekend.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for being here. Willie, you have a safe trip here.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.